Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, hopefully this next hour they're going to be those of Shelley Kalnitsky, who actually is going to be talking about the danger of cell phones. Whether we're going to be able to get them or not, the line keeps being busy. So right now, we're going to just offer open lines. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment. But basically, I think the subject of cell phones really is important, because if they were really dangerous, if they would really increase the incidence of cancer, wouldn't you think that the government would tell us? Wouldn't you think that you'd see articles in Time magazine and Newsweek magazine? And, well, let me tell you, a friend of mine, a very good friend, had actually given me a copy of a publication of the alumni organization of the University of Washington. And there was an article in there about cell phones and the fact that they actually had found that cell phones produced cancer. There was a very definite relationship between cell phones and the DNA damage that would lead to cancer. And that the University of Washington made the statement that they'd actually been threatened with all sorts of reprisals if they dared to actually publish an article pointing out the danger of cell phones. Why? Because, of course, cell phones are just so vitally important to our economy. People have made a lot of money out of it, but you have to understand that there's been an organized effort to limit access to information, showing that there is a definite causal relationship between at least three different types of brain tumors, and one would be an acoustic neuroma. I think one of them would be a glioma. I forgot what the third one was, but there's a definite relationship between people who use cell phones and not, as far as these brain tumors are concerned. And yet that fact has been carefully suppressed in America. Here in California, they're always so concerned about people using cell phones and having while they're driving. But nobody ever points out that when you use cell phones, you increase your chance of getting a brain tumor, and perhaps other tumors as well, but primarily brain tumors. This is the thing. And there is damage from the radiation from cell phones. And the fact that they've been able to conceal that information certainly reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, certainly we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295, and right now let's go to Jack calling in from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Doing well, thank you. Hopefully the fires out by you are fully extinguished.
Well, they're down to about 300 fires, 200 or 300 now. We actually had 1,800 fires there at one time. You just wonder how they could all occur spontaneously, but oh, shucks, I guess it was just that dry lightning that we had. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, there is something to be said over the fact they have banned, as part of their environmental, I don't know what you call it, environmental propaganda, to not clear the what I would call the kindling matter that's on the floor of the woods and the forest. You know, if they would clear all that out and let new growth come in, I think they discover they wouldn't have all these fires.
And, of course, the other thing is you need to have your roads open. They've let a lot of the fire roads that were used in the past, as fire breaks for getting crews in and out, they've let them overgrow. You see, the real policy of the government is not let the fires burn, but make them burn. And you've actually heard our interview with Michael Shaw, who heard a high government official make that statement. Our policy is not to let the forest fires burn, it's to make them burn. You have to understand there are people who have an entirely different philosophy than normal human beings, and they're working for government. We'll be right back. Well, go ahead, Jack. Anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, indeed, Dr. Stan. The cell phone frequency I think is microwave. And I remember when 60 Minutes, 2020, 48 Hours, back in the early 90s, did a series of stories, segments on that subject matter. And when they interviewed the industry spokespeople, they never addressed frequency. It was always, it's such low power, it couldn't possibly have any deleterious physiologic effect. They never once were asked about frequency. And that's everything. Frequency, as you probably know, look at ultraviolet light. Yeah, it probably does. I have a friend who's a PhD PT, who's an instructor, and she says they can cure all of this MRSA, VRSA, Staph aureus epidemic in the hospitals by simply administering, routine sessions with UV.
Right.
And yet they don't do it.
I know they don't. Well, there are lots of things that should be done that are not done because, you see, there is a population control agenda, Monograph, and many of the things that would prevent cancer, that would prevent other diseases, that would prevent tuberculosis, or that could be used to treat tuberculosis, have been carefully suppressed by the government. Among those, of course, is the value of vitamin D, vitamin D3, and certainly they know this is an effective treatment as far as cancer and chronic infections and similar problems because it harvests the immune system. And yet the government is telling you, oh, don't take that vitamin D very much. You might get intoxicated. Really, the scientific literature is coming out now with tremendous amounts of information on vitamin D. And we're looking forward to actually having some of the experts on it on our programs in the very near future. And going to put together a great four-tape set on the advent, the problems with vitamin D deficiency.
Indeed. And I've heard the previous interviews you did on vitamin D3. It's astonishing. And it's very inexpensive. So it's easily self-administered on a regular basis, like any other vitamin. One thing I did want to bring up, Dr. Stan, you mentioned last week, I think it was, something to the effect that Lindsay Williams had mentioned that the cost per barrel of oil was going to drop to $50. Now,
right.
You also mentioned that there were 70-some jet engines along the whatever length of the Alaska pipeline that are returning a billion cubic feet of methane natural gas on a daily basis.
That is actually up in Prudhoe Bay. So it's natural gas that comes up with the oil that they're taking out of the ground. Hang on there, Jack. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stad back here. And, of course, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And give us a call if you have a question or comment because it's going to be open lines, looks like it is. We haven't been able to get our regularly scheduled guest. Right now we have Jack from Michigan on. And what was the question, Jack?
Yes, indeed. I heard, believe it or not, Dr. Stan, there's a secular radio program, Phil Valentine, who pretends to be, a Christian fellow. Kind of a tongue-in-cheek joke, I think. And his dad was a congressman for some length of time out of North Carolina. Well, anyway, he mentioned in passing that in Europe, one of the European automakers has a vehicle that runs on natural methane gas, which yields something like 250 miles per gallon on that single gallon of natural methane gas. And I'm going to have to call him back on that because I can't remember. It might have been Volkswagen, it might have been BMW, whoever, Mercedes even. But imagine that, 260 miles on a gallon of natural methane gas, a billion cubic feet of which are being pumped back in at Prudhoe Bay, like you said.
Right.
So I'm just wondering what you think of the idea of people contacting their congressmen and senators. That's what I'm going to start doing, especially those that are on the Energy Commission, since we are obviously in an energy crisis. Okay, fine. Here we have all this methane gas being returned at Prudhoe Bay. We need to harness that energy for our cars and trucks and even our homes.
Well, of course, the thing is you have to understand that there's there's plenty of energy. There's massive deposits up there at the
Paul Island, even.
Massive deposits up there off the North Slope of Alaska. There's probably a close to 400 billion barrels of oil in the Bakken, B-A-A-K-A-N reserve, which is Montana and the Dakotas. And certainly there's massive deposits in Colorado. It's in oil shale. There's massive deposits off of both of our coasts. And unfortunately, they have no intention of letting it develop. But there is no oil shortage. It's all a scam. But, of course, it doesn't really matter whether it's a scam or not. It's like certainly they blocked the building of new oil refineries. They've blocked nuclear power. Nuclear would be very cheap and efficient. But you see, they want to run up the price of energy because they want to get us out of our cars and lower our standards. They want, of course, to raise the price of electricity. And more people are going to have more and more problems because there's no reason electricity should be high. It's very efficient, very economical to produce. But when they deregulate electricity, they did this not to lower prices as they sold the suckers. They did it so that they could raise the prices. The whole idea is to lower the living standards of the American people. Once you understand that, it's very easy to understand why they have not developed the oil deposits are in the United States, why they won't let them drill in Anwar. Oh, we've got to maintain the pristine wilderness. It is all a scam. And when the American people realize that they are the target of this scam, maybe they'll get angry, maybe they won't. We're just going to have to wait and see. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Now, Jack was just commenting that Lindsay Williams had said something about the price of oil dropping. Now, Lindsay has actually been told he must remain silent. He was given one of those offers that you can't refuse by some very, very powerful people in this country. If you go to Lindsay Williams' website, you'll find it's been taken down. If you go up on the Internet, you'll find out that an Amazon.com, why, of course, the cost of his books, which we used to sell for, I don't know, $9, I think, is at Amazon you can get one for about $240. The price has actually dropped from $1,900 down to $1,200 down to $240 for one copy of his book. Now, it is available on the Internet at simply Google in Lindsay Williams, Energy Non-Crisis. You can pull down the whole book on the Internet. We have a wonderful DVD where he actually tells the story. But Lindsay Williams cannot distribute those DVDs. He's been told not to. We have a great four-tape or four-CD set of our interviews with Lindsay and other people on the oil hoax. We call it the oil deceptions, the title of the tape set. Everybody should get these. They should copy them. They should distribute them. We need to get the American people to understand this is a scam which is aimed at impoverishing the American people. And when you understand that, why, of course, there's no question as to what's going on. Again, I number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, what else?
Well, Dr. Stan, based on all that and the fact that the municipalities, I think, are paid to poison the water with the fluoride that's used,
right,
which is a hazardous waste chemical, I think the time has come. I've talked about circulating a petition. I've done that in the past. I talked about organizing a grassroots think tank. We have such tremendous opportunity now with these crucial burning issues that who wouldn't want to hold the government accountable for breach of the public trust, for poisoning the water, for instance, and for purposely, deliberately suppressing the development of all these oil reserves. I think the time has come where we at the grassroots level are just going to have to get out and organize like a citizens a grand jury of our own, because the government has proved to be our enemy.
Well, I think what we have to do is reach the public, because, you see, Jack, not enough people understand what's going on. Not enough people really understand that they and their families and their future and their freedom are under attack today. First of all, we have to build a cadre of people who understand what's going on and care about it and value freedom. And at that point, we can be effective. Not until that point will we be effective. Otherwise, it's simply an exercise in futility, which is why I spend 5 hours a day, Sydney, here on the radio trying to get people to think. And, we've got about 60, well, we've got over 65 outlets at the present time. But, of course, these, we just need a lot more. We need to reach people all across America and let them see the big picture. There's so much disinformation out there and so much pablum and so much other unimportant information. Okay, anything else you want to say?
Dr. Stan, and you know what? Every day, as I told you in the past, every opportunity I direct people to your website. Today I did it with three people. I try to get at least three people every day. And like I told you, I am organizing a grassroots think tank. It's taking time, but at least I can get people motivated with your website, and hopefully they can stay up to hear your program. If not, you have such a well-endowed website. So I feel based on that, Lord willing, our efforts will come to yielding great fruit.
Well, let me just get our webpage, out, and our telephone number is our telephone number, if you'd like to call in, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, the 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Omero had called in from Washington State, but he seems to have dropped off the line. If you'd like to call back again, we'll be glad to talk to him. But, Sydney, we've got a great new section on our webpage. I don't know if you've been there recently, but if you scroll down on the Radio Liberty webpage to videos, and then beneath that is other videos. And, of course, what we've done is simply take a number of links, and you can actually, for instance, see the Building 7 come down. You can see Aaron Russo's interview with Nate Rockefeller, who actually talks about the secret society that controls our country and invites Aaron Russo to come on board. In other words, Aaron Russo is telling, I believe, somebody from Prison Planet, from Alex Jones' program, about his contact with Nate Rockefeller, who explained exactly how the elite runs things and how foolish it is to try to oppose them. And they've got all sorts of old clips from Ron Paul in the various speeches he's given, and certainly commentary on so many issues. And, of course, I get half a dozen or more YouTube referrals every day, and when I see something that really looks good, I give it to my son. He posts it up there. So this is an excellent place to go if you want to know why the Twin Towers came down, why Building 7 came down. Just go to RadioLiberty.com, www.RadioLiberty.com. Scroll down to videos, and directly under videos is a section that says other videos. And we recommend that to you. Of course, we recommend the video section there. You can see a lot of the videos that we've produced or that other people have produced that we think are well worthwhile. Okay, anything else, Jack?
In closing, Dr. Stan, I just want to thank you, in addition to having the fellow from AE Architectural Engineers 9/11 Truth.org on a few weeks ago. That was a marvelous interview you did with him.
That was Richard Gage, and yes, he's a very gracious person with a lot of great information. He's an architect, and he simply points out that there's no way the Twin Towers could have come down the way they did, and certainly there's no way that Building 7 could have come down as we were told. Obviously, Building 7 was obviously a controlled demolition.
Yeah.
Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. It's open lines for this hour. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Go ahead, Jack. Anything you'd like to say?
The interview you did with the fella on genetic modification, was it Jeffrey Smith?
Jeffrey Smith. We've done a number of interviews with Jeffrey on you talked about genetically modified corn and things of that sort.
That's right. And we did another
interview recently with somebody else on that same subject, and certainly they're poisoning the American people with genetically modified food. Oh, we did an interview with a gentleman from Canada. He was actually a farmer up there. His first name was Percy.
Schmeiser,
right. And Percy simply took on Monsanto and won. But, of course, if you listen to his tape, you'll realize that they know they're poisonous with genetically modified food.
Well, now,
go ahead, Jeff.
also, Dr. Stan, over here, my dad had planted grapevines 40-some years ago. Of course, he's long deceased. He took flu shots every year and contracted an extraordinarily rare autoimmune disease, according to the University of Michigan. And but then they, of course, treated him with the FDA-approved wonder drugs that gave him multiple myeloma, which is actually the cause of death. Anyway, this year the Japanese beetle has just decimated the grapevines, and every time I call to get these Japanese beetle traps, oh yeah, we've got them, and then I show up a day later and they're gone. And I got to thinking, I remember you saying, for instance, that fluoride, I'm thinking, okay, why not try Listerine mouthwash, which if I was a bug and smelled that, I'd stay blocks away from that. But if it's got fluoride in it, hey, you know what? Maybe I should see what fluoridated Listerine would do on the Japanese beetles.
Well, I think basically they do spray a lot of the grapevines in California with a fluoride spray. Of course, you can wipe it off. It doesn't necessarily get into the grape, but of course it's on the surface, and they use this, of course, to keep the infestations down. So, you know, certainly there's a use for fluoride sprays, but if they'll kill the insects, you know, certainly many rat poisons are fluoride. Why would you want to put it in our toothpaste? Why would you want to put it in our drinking water? Why would you want to give it in pills form to children, which they're doing? And of course, we're told, oh my goodness, it's all about children's teeth. It's, oh my goodness, you don't want children to have cavities, do you? That's why we have to poison the public. And one of the most frightening things about this is certainly Dr. Paul Conant, who's a retired professor of chemistry, had pointed out that they are debating, and I don't know whether they're actually doing it or not, I certainly hope not, but they're debating, and they have suggested that they would allow the fumigation of wheat so that the residual would not be fluoride and the wheat would not be more than one part per thousand. Well, that's the amount that they have in toothpaste. And if you read the toothpaste tube, they tell you that, you know, if you were to swallow any of that toothpaste, why, of course, you shouldn't need to go to the poison center. And yet they want, of course, to fumigate the wheat with that to kill the vermin, but, of course, leaving a residual of one part per thousand, you know, is really, really frightening.
Well, that is, Dr. Stan. And the toothpaste warning I read recently, because I found an old tube of Crest on it, which I think I got because it was recommended as a scouring material to clean pans that might have cooked on grease, whatever. On the Crest it says, if you swallow more than you brush with, call the nearest poison center. So I got to thinking, what could possibly be the rationale here, right? Well, we all grew up with birthdays. We had birthday cakes. There was icing on the birthday cake, right? So, okay, I see. The toothpaste has, most people would say, oh, I love the flavor of this or that toothpaste. Well, maybe they're thinking that everyone's going to have a flashback to their childhood days when they were eating these marvelous birthday cakes and all that icing on the cake. And they're going to think, oh, this is icing on the birthday cake. I think I'll eat half the tube. I mean, it's perverse that they would put that kind of a warning on there, because it really doesn't make any sense.
Well, hold it. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it's open lines this afternoon, or this evening, because, of course, a regularly scheduled guest, his line seems to be consistently busy. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. If you have any question, and of course we were just talking with Jack about the danger of fluoride. And of course, as you know, they're fluoridating about 68% of the communities in the United States. Many of those communities are actually being paid to put the toxic waste in the water. What are they putting in the water? They're putting something called hydrofluosilicic acid that contains arsenic and lead and polonium 220, which is radioactive material. Oh, these are all deadly poisons. And of course, the material is so toxic that you cannot put this into a landfill. It's very expensive. You can't put this into the streams. You can't take it out and dump it in the ocean. It's too toxic. So the solution, well, the solution is dilution, putting it in your drinking water. And you say, that's madness. No, it's not. Not if you understand that fluoride is known, and because about 50% of the hydrofluorosilicic acid is a form of a fluoride. It's not sodium fluoride, but it is the sort of fluoride that you get from scrubbing the chimneys, where, of course, they're manufacturing phosphate fertilizers, and they have to do something with that, and so they put this in your water. Actually, when they transport this to the local community, they have to use special tanker trucks where the tank is lined with rubber, because it'll eat right through metal. It will eat right through metal. I mean, this is what they're doing. It's a hydrofluorosilicic acid, and the acid will eat right through the metal of the truck. And they dump it into the drinking water, and they know. And, of course, Roger Masters, back at Dartmouth University, has written extensively on this. He's basically interested in criminal behavior. And he found that in the areas where, of course, they were putting the hydrofluorosilicic acid in the water, why the incidence of criminal behavior was much higher. And as they analyzed the children in those areas, and of course, extensive studies were done on 450,000 children, one of the largest studies ever done, where they found that in the areas where they had the hydrofluorosilicic acid, the incidence of lead in the children's blood doubled if they were white, one of four times if they're Hispanic, and six times if they're black. Now, basically, lead causes rage. It causes criminal activity. It causes a change in the whole personality. Lead is one of the most deadly of all the toxins. And certainly, they're not having enough lead, we don't think, in the hydrofluorosilicic acid. We think it's probably pulling the lead out of this solder in homes. Older homes had lead solder. Or it could, certainly, but we do know that the blacks had six times the blood level, increase in blood level that the whites did. Is that the reason? Of course, all across America, we're finding that certainly one in every three young black men is in prison, probation, or parole. I think this is probably part of it, and they know that. But you see, there's an intense hatred of the blacks among the occult elite, and they are occult, and they are elitists, and they're sort of disciples of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, and of course the Theosophical Society that hated blacks, and of course that's why Adolf Hitler hated blacks. It's said that he read Helena Petrovna Blavatsky's book, The Secret Doctrine, every night, and it said also that his copy, Adolf Hitler's copy of The Secret Doctrine, is kept in the National Archives here in the United States. Until people understand the relationship between Nazism and the occult, until people understand the relationship between the occult and the forces that control our society today, nothing really makes sense. I mean, who would want to harm children's minds? Well, this is what certainly Robert Masters back at Dartmouth had come up with. We have our interviews with him, which we think are very important. We think that it's so vitally important that people certainly read my articles on in my newsletter on fluoride. You can get that at RadioLiberty.com. We have four tape sets on fluoride. We have DVDs on fluoride, some of them put together by our friend Dr. David Kennedy. We have a wonderful book on fluoride, The Fluoride Deception. And they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Certainly, fluoride influences fertility. Fluoride lowers intelligence. Fluoride actually produces cancer, and it actually increases the incidence of osteogenic cancer in children, and overall increases the incidence of cancer about 40% in populations. It suppresses the thyroid. It actually alters the endocrine system. They know all of these things. It softens bones, marked increase, almost a doubling of hip fractures in postmenopausal women in fluoridated areas. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Give us a call. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Jack, you know, this is one of the greatest tragedies of our time, and people don't really understand that they want to poison our children. They're poisoning them with fluoride. They're poisoning them with mercury in the influenza shots. And, they, of course, for years they had it in the childhood vaccinations, the mercury. They've taken out the childhood vaccinations, and then, of course, now they recommend the children get influenza shots because influenza is not a childhood vaccination, but of course they give it to the mothers in the first 3 months of pregnancy, in the first trimester. They recommend the shot for a child at 6 months of age. Influenza shots do nothing in the way of good, but they do a great deal of harm, and the great tragedy is that they're damaging the minds, the brains, and the development of our children. And certainly the doctors don't understand this. I mean, the doctors certainly want to help. But because of the degree of the control over organized medicine, the average individual, the average physician, believes that vaccines are safe and effective, and they're not. So we're poisoning our children with mercury fillings. We're poisoning the entire population with mercury fillings, even though recently the FDA has come out and agreed that mercury fillings are harmful and they do vent, and certainly they're going to redefine their regulations as far as mercury. But it's going to take them a year or 2 years or 10 years to get around to that. But they lost a lawsuit. Charlie Brown's going to start suing dentists, and I give him my blessing. It's the only way we're ever going to dramatize this issue and, of course, get the dentists to stop putting in mercury fillings that are venting mercury and destroying the minds of our children, our adults, and contributing to Alzheimer's disease. We're poisoning our children with aspartame. We're poisoning our children with a genetically modified food and milk. They're actually... People who drink a great deal of milk, the women have a 6 times increase in breast cancer, 6 times increase in breast cancer. Men have a 3 times increase in prostate cancer. All of these things are well known, but anybody who tries to bring this out, especially when they're talking against milk, because, of course, Monsanto has actually produced something called the recombinant bovine growth hormone, RPGH, and certainly they don't want the public to know that. And they've actually threatened radio stations and commentators and television producers who've tried to bring out the dangers of milk, especially the milk that's produced by recombinant bovine growth hormone. These things are going on in America, Jack, and when you tell people, they look at you as if you're crazy.
Well, that is true, but you know what? I follow up as much as I can, and I just tell people...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. It's open line. It's open line Monday because our regularly scheduled guest didn't show up. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Anything else, Jack, before we let you go?
Dr. Stan, I bless you for bringing up the action initiated by Charlie Brown, and I think the same thing could be done and should be done on fluoridation. And when you revealed that it isn't just the hydrofluorosilic, you know, that long term there, but it has the radioactive polonium or something in there.
Polonium, right.
Polonium. Oh, and that's in addition to the fluoride, or is that...
No, that's like basically it's about 50% fluoride, and the rest of it is lead, arsenic, polonium-220, and a mixture of other toxic brew.
Is that a concomitant constituent to the fluoride effluent, or are they deliberately adding that?
No, this is what actually comes out of the chimneys, the flues, where they're actually producing the phosphate fertilizer.
Well, they know it's in there. Then.
Oh, sure they do. There's mercury in it, too. So it's actually arsenic, lead, mercury, and polonium-220.
I tell you what, Dr. Stan, if there was ever a golden opportunity, I can't imagine anything better... Unless, you know, it could possibly be a sustainable development agenda 21. I mean, that's pretty horrific as well, but here it is.
Well, I think one of the best things we can do is get people, challenge them to get on the Internet and go to NTEU280.org. NTEU280.org. That's National Transportation Education. NTEU. It's National Transportation something. Maybe it's Educators Union, but it's NTEU280.org. And so this is the website that is put up by the employees of the Environmental Protection Agency, the scientists who've gone over the toxicity of fluoride, the the engineers who work for the EPA. They have written letters to Congress. They've written letters to the media. They're trying to get out the information that the government is poisoning the people. The government is poisoning the people. So go to their website. This is the website of the union, and here they can speak out publicly without losing their jobs. And get the information at NTEU280.org. And if you have a problem, give us a call. But if you can get people to go there and read the information, this will begin to introduce them to the fact that they're being poisoned. And all you want to do, Jack, is just start saying to people, how do you feel about them poisoning your children intentionally? And they're going to look at you. Go to this website. This information is being suppressed, like so much else is being suppressed, because the media is controlled. And hopefully you can intrigue people into going. That's all we can do, Jack.
Yeah, indeed. And NTE-280, do they describe the polonium?
No. That isn't other material. That certainly we have a great deal of information on all of this. Dr. Paul Conant describes this at his website, which is fluoridealert.org.
Oh, okay.
It's either fluoridealert.org or .net. I'm not sure which one, but certainly you can learn a lot more at fluoridealert.org or .net than you will from me. Anyway, God bless, Jack. Thanks so much for calling.
God bless, Dr. Steve.
Bye-bye. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And let's go to Donna, who's calling us from Michigan. Hi, Donna. How are you doing?
Okay. I'm calling about Martha Stewart.
Right.
Martha Stewart.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, we know she's a millionaire or billionaire or something like that.
Well, she's got a lot of money anyway, that's right. But it didn't keep her out of jail. When they targeted, it was the most incredible, suit to try to put her away. It wasn't that she'd done anything wrong. They claimed that she lied to somebody from the government who was asking her about some stock she sold. And, of course, it was all contrived. They wanted to prove that they can destroy anybody they want to, no matter how powerful they are. And so how can you or I possibly stand up against the power of the wicked occult forces that control our government today? But go ahead, Donna.
Well, my question was, in a recent article of Martha Stewart Living Magazine, it mentioned that Martha Stewart and David Rockefeller were friends. And I was wondering if you were aware of any other connections between her stellar situation and any other connections with the elite.
I really don't know. I really can't comment it. I'm not an expert on Martha Stewart.
Okay.
All right, but I think it's fascinating that she was connected with David Rockefeller because, of course, he is probably the single most powerful man in the United States today, at least that we can name by name. Because Rockefeller has been associated with the occult for years. And this is what people don't understand, at least according to my friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy, why David Rockefeller used to go to La Boca Grande, which is a center in Colorado where Kissinger and McNamara and all of the occultists went to meet the other occultists. And suddenly this is one of the major centers. It was organized. It's 100,000-acre little resort there in Colorado. For the occult, and occultists come from all over the world to that spot where, of course, they meet, interlock with one another, and plan our future. Anything else you'd like to say? No, of course, this is simply what I have on second hand. I don't know this personally, but I was told by somebody who is a very careful researcher that there's a definite tie-in to David Rockefeller and the occult. Anything else you'd like to say?
Thank you for what you're doing.
Well, God bless, and thanks so very much. And let's go right now to Herman, who's calling from Carmel. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And hi, Herman. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great. I wanted to ask you about the fluoride. Does the
you advertise the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light,
right,
the water filter.
Right.
And I've used the Big Berkey for years, and it has those ceramic filters that you can clean off from time to time, and it works great. But I'd like to ask, does the Berkey remove fluoride?
No, and it will not remove the fluoride. You have to get special fluoride filters. Now, if you have a Big Berkey with four ceramic filters, you can get something called the PF4 filters. Why PF4? Well, post-filter 4, there's four of them. So they're specifically designed for the Big Berkey, and they will actually take out, 95% of the fluoride. But certainly the regular ceramic filters, as you know, they're ceramic, and then they're filled with activated charcoal, and they'll remove certainly bacteria and fungicide, and certainly the parasite, but they will not remove fluoride. You have to have a special filter to do that. And, of course, the PF4 filters last probably 6 months or so, you know, if you're using it at a regular rate. So this is why we tell people, we advise people, if they have fluoridated water, to get the Berkey Light, because they only have two filters, and since there's only two fluoride filters, they only cost half as much. So in the long run, they're probably better off with that. Anything else, Herman?
So the Berkey Light does remove the fluoride.
No, you have to get the PF2 filters along with it. Now, I will tell you that the Berkey Light filter, when the filters are brand new, they will take out the fluoride fairly well, but as time goes by, they don't. And that's why, of course, you have to get the PF2 filters along with that to remove any significant part of the fluoride, and they claim that it'll remove probably 95% or more of the fluoride from the water.
Okay, that's great. Now, the other thing, you have had several guests in the last several months about the Ready Reserve foods, and, you know, we've seen these articles about coming food shortages, and what being ready or food shortages that may be caused by dislocation in the distribution system, floods, droughts, and or a massive earthquake.
All right, fine. So I'd be glad to address
that. I'll take the answer off here.
Okay, thank you, Herman. And our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And is there a possibility that we're going to have famine? Well, that couldn't happen, most people say. It just couldn't be, but I think there's a very real possibility that it can be. First of all, the United States today, the Congress, in their wisdom, has mandated that, of course, that the corn ethanol, corn be used to create ethanol to about 25% of our corn crop. And remember, America is the largest exporter of corn and corn products in the entire world. And we provide corn to countries throughout the world who cannot produce enough corn of their own. So taking 25% of our corn crop away can create problems. The other problem is that this has been a very unusual year. And there have been tremendous droughts and tremendous floods in certain areas. We know that in certain areas where they produce corn, there's been droughts. I'm talking about eastern Colorado, northern Texas. And then, of course, there's been floods there in the Midwest. And, of course, they couldn't get the corn in time. And, of course, there's real fear that in those areas where they got a late planting of corn, if it's very, very hot in August, that will destroy the crop. So there is a real fear that there's going to be a relative corn shortage. We're not going to have the corn to ship throughout the world. In addition to that, there's a real problem as far as wheat is concerned. Now, it depends upon what the wheat crop was in the United States and in Canada, but we do know that in Africa and in Asia, the wheat rust has wiped out the fields. We do know that in Australia, which has been a traditional large exporter of wheat, why, of course, they've had a drought for 7 or 8 years. We do know that, of course, there are problems as far as the rice crop is concerned in large parts of the world. And certainly some countries are trying to limit the exporting of rice so that their people will have enough and so the prices won't go up. We do know that the price of food is going up all throughout the world, and in many of the pretty very, very poor countries, the price of food has gone up 50 to 75%, and people are making $1 a day or $2 a day, and there's about 2 million people who live on $2 a day or less, and there's about 1 million people who live on $1 a day or less. And when you start increasing the price of food, well, you lay open the very real possibility of famine. But if here in the United States, why, certainly there is a definite possibility of getting in some real problems as far as food are concerned. Why? Well, of course, with the increase in the price of corn, why, of course, then anything that corn is traditionally used, a significant part of the crop is used for feed, for chicken feed, or for feed for catfish and for fish farming, for feed for cattle, especially when they're fattening them up in preparation for slaughter, and then for hogs. And, of course, what's happened is because of the price of corn and soybeans has gone up so high, many of the fish farms have just shut down. The catfish farms or regular fish farming, salmon and others, are shutting down. They can't afford the fish food, and they can't make a profit at it. And then, of course, the dairy farmers and the beef farmers are slaughtering their herds. Why? Because they can't afford to feed them. And right now, of course, the price of meat isn't going up. But you wait until a year from now, when, of course, there's a shortage of beef. Why? Of course, the price will go through the roof. And then, of course, the same thing is true with the hog farmers. They're slaughtering actually herds of hogs because of the increase in the price of corn. So there is... This is the law of unintended consequences. Congress enacted a law that mandated that we would put ethanol into our gasoline. Originally, it was 4 billion gallons. I think it's going to be 8 billion gallons of ethanol that's to be added to our gasoline here in the next year or so. And, of course, rather than, of course, make it out of sugar cane, which is much more efficient, much cheaper, the lobby, of course, got Congress to mandate corn alcohol. We could import the alcohol far cheaper from Brazil, but we're not allowed to do that because we put a tariff on ethanol coming in from Brazil. So we've run up the prices, and we've run them up astronomically, and the tragedy is, of course, this is going to impact on every part of certainly of our food bills. And people don't understand that there is a prophecy, and I look and behold a pale horse, and the rider upon him was death, and Hades followed short behind, and power was given unto them to kill a quarter of the population of the world by the sword, by famine, by pestilence, which is disease, and by the beasts of this world. And ladies and gentlemen, I believe, of course, our enemies, the occultists, are trying to fulfill the prophecies of the Book of Revelation, or of the Revelation, because they want to put their leader onto the throne of the earth. You can't understand so much of what's going on today because it doesn't make sense unless you understand the spiritual forces behind it. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Kirk calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Kirk. How are you doing?
Hi, fine. I've got a couple questions.
Okay.
I've had some engineers tell me that it costs more energy to produce a gallon of ethanol than you get energy from a gallon of ethanol.
You're absolutely right. Yes, but of course, the way they calculate it, they have to figure the corn, pardon me, the diesel fuel that's going to go into the tractors that are planting it, and of course, then the actual production. Yes, it takes more energy to produce a gallon of ethanol than the ethanol actually produces. So it was a terrible solution, but of course, a lot of our congressmen got paid off. We have the finest congressmen, the finest Congress that money could buy. And unfortunately, these men are not being held responsible. They violated their oath to uphold the Constitution. They think that in their wisdom they can solve all sorts of problems. They're the ones who gave us MTBE. Remember that? Put MTB in the gasoline. It cut down on air pollution. And, of course, it ended up polluting the air and polluting the water, and it cost billions of dollars to settle the lawsuits because of the damage it did.
Well, aren't the wells largely polluted forever, too, from that stuff?
Yeah, I hear.
Oh, boy. Now, I've heard about, from you and from others, about the Rockefellers' connections with the occult, but how far back in that family line, and what is the what is the real name of the Rockefellers in the old days? How far back does your cult connection go?
I can't tell you. I can tell you that Lawrence Rockefeller funded the writings of Barbara Marx Hubbard, who is one of the leading occultists in America. And her book, The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, was actually funded by the Lawrence Rockefeller Endowment for the Humanities. I know that Stephen Rockefeller, Nelson Rockefeller's son, was deeply involved in the occult. We've read his writings, and of course he's gone to be his just reward. But he was one of the three writers of the Earth Charter, along with the occultist Mikhail Gorbachev, and of course the occultist Marie Strong. So then we have David Rockefeller's supposed connection with the La Baca Grande, which was established by Marie Strong, that little 100,000 or so. Maybe 200,000 acre enclave there in Colorado. Maybe it's only 100,000 acres. But anyway, whatever it is, it's a center for occult meetings. And we know that Kissinger, according to West Magazine, Kissinger and David Rockefeller and Robin McNamara used to go there regularly. Hang on, we'll be right back. Okay, anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah, what about Winthrop Rockefeller? I never hear about him, but he's supposed to have been the head of the family at least at one time.
Well, Winthrop actually had the largest pornographic connection, the largest connection of pornography anywhere in the world. So, I mean, certainly there's a very strong relationship between the occult and pornography. And basically, of course, it's a violation of God's laws. You're not supposed to keep your mind focused on that, but that was Winthrop.
Now, what about, I've heard that the name was Rogenfelder. I've heard that it was Rockefeller. Where does the family come from?
I really can't tell you. I'm not an expert on that. I've heard all of these things, but I haven't researched it, so I don't want to make a comment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, Kirk. Thanks very much for calling. And, of course, that was Kirk calling from Santa Cruz. And certainly the history of the Rockefellers is fascinating. But we recommend, certainly, that our listeners read the book Memoirs. It's the memoirs of David Rockefeller. And there he will tell you about how his daughters are such good friends of Fidel Castro, and one of his daughters goes down regularly to meet with Fidel Castro. Why would the daughter of the most powerful and wealthy man in the United States, and believe me, of course, the Rockefeller family is far more wealthy and far more powerful than Bill Gates or Warren Buffett could ever hope to be. But, of course, they have all their business interests are very carefully concealed so that you can't figure out what they own or how it works. But believe me, the Rockefellers have their finger into almost everything in the United States. Why would the daughter of one of the leading capitalists in the world be going down to visit Fidel Castro and spending so much time with him? And I would like to suggest, of course, that nothing is it appears to be. If you read Nelson Rockefeller's memoirs on page 405, he will tell you that some people say that I and my family, are part of a secret cabal that's conspiring against the best interests of the United States and are trying to actually create a new international system. And if that is the charge, I stand guilty. I am a proud internationalist. Those are his words, not mine. I'm paraphrasing it, but that's in essence what he said. Page 405, we do carry the book, Memoirs. You need to get it. You need to read it. And, of course, you need to see our DVD on the World Revolution, where, of course, we discuss David Rockefeller. And we discuss, of course, how the American CIA and the State Department brought communism to Cuba, installed Fidel Castro, and they knew he was a communist. And, of course, how do we know this? Well, because basically you'll see on that a DVD, my interview with Ambassador Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the revolution, and he will tell you that the government knew Fidel Castro was a communist. The CIA helped to install him there, but we can't let the American people know that. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. We've got Mike on the line. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question or comment?
Just a comment about the Rockefeller.
Right.
I just wanted your caller to know that the book, as you know, The Rockefeller File, is online, available, the full text.
That's Gary Allen's book, isn't it?
Gary Allen. If you Google The Rockefeller File, you'll find the website five or six down from the top. It comes up pretty quick. You can find it in 5 minutes and cost you about probably $6 for paper and ink to print it out. And if you don't mind my saying, Gary Allen goes through the ancestry a bit. He says there's not a lot, but one possible true name for Rockefeller is, I'm not going to bother trying to pronounce it. I'll spell it, R-O-Q-U-E-F-E-U-I-L-L-E. Rockefeller or something like that.
All right, fine.
And, but that's just one line of understanding that may or may not be true. But the book's worth getting. It's a great read. There's a lot of good information in there. It dates back to 1976, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I know you're at the end of the program, so I'll get off now.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Mike. Talk to you later tonight. That was Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Our telephone number, if you'd like to order some of the material we have, David Rockefeller's book, or you'd like to get my DVD, my interview with the American ambassador to Cuba, where he tells you how the CIA and the State Department brought Fidel Castro to power, knowing for what he was a communist. Have you ever wondered why our CIA, which doesn't have any difficulty killing anybody else they want to in the world, I mean, they certainly were able, of course, to get the mafia to, you know, give Jack Ruby an offer he couldn't refuse, so they got him to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. And, oh, you didn't know that these mafia were working with the CIA? And, of course, the mafia had told Jack Ruby that he and his family would be tortured to death if he didn't walk into the Parkland police station and kill Lee Harvey Oswald. The story is told in a book called Double Cross. It was written by the brother of the head of the mafia. Chuck Giancana wrote it about his brother, Sam Giancana. And, of course, that's how it really works. Have you ever wondered why the CIA was never able to kill, you know, Fidel Castro, even when he came to the United States, to the United Nations, and was up there visiting with David Rockefeller? Well, let me tell you, they could have killed him at any time. They didn't want to, but they've got to give you this feeling, of course, he's the enemy. And most people, even our military, believe he's the enemy. They came up with something called Operation Northwood, and if you don't know about that, you should certainly look on the Internet. It's all covered there. It's Operation Northwood. And, of course, it was a plan by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to justify an attack on Fidel Castro and on Cuba to depose Castro. But, of course, the hierarchy of our government understood that Castro was a very convenient shell. He was the best enemy money could buy, and our attention would be focused on Fidel Castro, rather than, of course, what the real problems of our society were. You always have to have an enemy to rally the people behind the government. It's the oldest trick in the world, which is why we've never tried to get Fidel Castro out of power. And, of course, the Bay of Pigs, they didn't send those Cuban nationals in to win. They sent them in to die, just like we sent our boys to Vietnam, not to win, but to die. We were financing the North Vietnamese all during the war. If you don't believe that, you need to get our little pamphlet on the Communist-Capitalist Alliance. That's the Communist-Capitalist Alliance. Goes into how we were funding the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. Of course, the same thing in Korea. We did not go there to win any more than we went to Iraq to win, any more than we're in Afghanistan to win. After all, who's funding the Taliban today? Why, they're being funded by the Pakistani intelligence. And who's funding the Pakistani intelligence? Why, ladies and gentlemen, you are, through your tax money. We're giving billions of dollars to Pakistan every single year. And they're doing such a good job funding the Taliban, creating the best enemy money can buy. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 4... I'm sorry, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owner, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, of course, the next hour, they're going to be those of Ellen Gunderson Traylor. Of Ellen Gunderson Traylor, who's a writer. We carry 10 of the books she's written, wonderful, wonderful books, already based upon the Bible, either directly or certainly indirectly. She's written a couple of novels, The Priest and the Oracle, and maybe we'll talk about those a little later. But Ellen has certainly been... How long have you been writing, Ellen?
Since I was a little girl.
All right, fine. And so we won't ask you how many years ago that was anyway. Certainly, Alison, Ellen, we thought maybe we'd talk tonight about the book of Abraham, because the story of Abraham, who really was originally named Abram, but God renamed him Abraham, it really, of course, begins to give us some clear view of why we're having so many problems today in the Near East between the Arabs and the Israelis. But why did you pick up the story, Ellen? Why did you write a book about Abraham? Why is he important? Why is he important in biblical history? And why is that story so important today?
Well, thank you for having me again. You know, Song of Abraham was my very first book. It was published by Tyndale House in 1973, and I got the rights to it in about 2000 and reprinted it, so it has never really been out of print, which in itself tells you a lot, because the subject matter is timeless and, in fact, becomes more timely as time goes on.
Well, of course, in many of your books, you know, certainly the book on Noah, the book on Esther, the book on Melchizedek. I mean, Melchizedek, I can never even pronounce that correctly.
Uh-huh.
But so many of your books really are timeless, because the story of the Bible is timeless. And you do a tremendous amount of research on these before you write the books, don't you?
I sure do, yes. I don't know, maybe three-quarters of my time is research on a lot of these books. Song of Abraham, I started that book, Dr. Stan, when I was still in college. I was in my 20s, so people can do a quick bit of calculation there. 1973 it came out, and, you know, that was my first endeavor. That in itself is a story which I might tell you sometime, but as to why I wrote about Abraham, I had a double major, or at least a very strong minor and a major in college. I majored in English and I minored in archaeology. And so my interest, I had this dream, as every English major has, of writing a great novel. And with my interest in history and archaeology, it naturally inclined to doing something like this. But as for why Abraham, in 1967, we went through a war, as you undoubtedly recall, between the Arabs and Jews, in which a very small army of Jews overcame seven armies of Arabs. And at that time, the commentators like Huntley, Brinkley, Cronkite, and so forth were actually making comparisons to wars of the Bible, like Gideon and Joshua. And they were saying that this kind of a victory was just unheard of and could only be reminiscent of those old battles. Well, at the time, I found this very fascinating.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with
sure.
Go right ahead, Ellen.
So anyway, I began to look into the story of Abraham. Of course, I knew the story from the Bible, but I wanted to know more about what was going on with the Arabs and the Jews. And I knew that Abraham was the father of both the Arabs and the Jews. Now, many people don't realize this. They don't realize that the Jews and the Arabs are brothers, going back to Abraham's two sons, Isaac and Ishmael, Ishmael being his firstborn son, but the son of a slave woman, and Isaac being the legitimate son, and yet the secondborn. And, you know, there isn't a court in this world today who'd be able to solve the question of who the inheritance should go to in human terms, is there, Dr. Stan?
Because, no, I don't think so.
Because both boys had a claim to it. And Ishmael, by virtue of the fact that he was the firstborn, could say, well, the inheritance should be mine. Isaac, by virtue of the fact that he was the son of the actual wife of Abraham, could say, but I'm the legitimate heir. And so, actually, believe it or not, people, the wars and the problems that we've had all down through history for the past 4,000 years in the Middle East, or any war or conflict related to the Arabs and Jews, stems from those two young men and the problems they had between themselves. All of this started then. And, you know, I began speaking on Abraham back in the early 70s when my book first came out. And at that time, you may recall, those of you who are old enough, that the gas prices were spiking. I think they were something like 99 cents a gallon, and we thought that was just atrocious.
I remember those long lines we had at the yes. Gas stations, you know, and yes. You fill your gas tank every, depending on what your license plate was, your name was, it's mm-hmm. supposed to be an odd or even days. And supposedly shortages of oil, there weren't any, but
right.
Of course it was all contrived. But certainly we were all concerned about the impact of what was going on in the Middle East here
well,
on America.
And that's about the time that I began speaking on this. And I would tell people back then, and I will say
hold that again. Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment here with Ellen. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ellen Gundersen-Traylor, who's an author, and as they say, we carry 10 of her books. If you have not read them, you can certainly get them off of our website. You can order them. I mean, whether it be the book on Esther, the one on Mary Magdalene, or the ones on Melchizedek, or on Noah, or on Abraham, and then, of course, the priest and the oracle, and there's a couple I've missed, but they're all great reads. My wife has read every one of them, and, of course, I've read every one of them as well. A wonderful, wonderful source of biblical information based specifically on the Bible, and a great deal of research that Ellen has done. But she was talking about how you can't understand any of the problems of the last 4,000 years and the wars between the Arabs and the Jews unless you understand the background of Ishmael and Isaac, the two sons of Abraham, and, of course, the conflicts that started at that time and are continuing to this very day. Basically, they were brothers, half-brothers, admittedly, one of the product of a union between Abraham and Hagar, his wife's handmaiden, that was Ishmael, and, of course, the other, prodigy of his barren wife. I mean, Sarah was in her 90s when she conceived and had Isaac. Certainly truly a miraculous phenomenon, which certainly has never been paralleled to my knowledge since that time. But anyway, of course, during the early 1970s, when Ellen was writing this book, she was beginning to speak out and talk on the story of Abraham. So you picked the story up there, Ellen.
Well, what I would say to people back then, and I would repeat it today because it's every bit as true today, is that when you're waiting in those lines for the gas, or when you're paying $5 a gallon, or when your bread has tripled in cost, you can blame Abraham.
Right.
I would always start my talks out that way, and people would look at me so quizzically, what are you talking about? How can you blame somebody who lived 4,000 years ago? Well, the fact is that if Abraham had had faith to believe the promise of God, that he would have a son if he would just be patient, and not run ahead of God, then we would not have the issue that developed between Isaac and Ishmael. That does not mean that God didn't love Ishmael or didn't have a purpose for him when he was born, but the promise was meant to go through the legitimate heir, Isaac, and it has been this issue, this contention, born this fruit all down through these years. The Arabs, of course, are inflating the gas prices. I know there's more to it than that, but all of this goes back to animosity between the Arab nations and nations that support Israel. And to this point, we are still doing that. We're supporting Israel. And so, of course, this is leveled at the Western world in this way. You know, another thing that is a moral lesson here for all of us is that what we do doesn't end with us. The good we do doesn't end with us, but neither does the evil or the mistakes that we make end with us. Abraham was certainly a godly man. I'm sure he, in his own way, thought he was doing what was right, but he wasn't acting in faith. And when we do something in this life, for good or for ill, it will impact future generations. And if there's any example of that in this world, it's the story of Abraham. We are still in this, the entire world today is reeling under the impact of what Abraham did in moving out of the will of God and taking another woman in order to have a child by her. It's just a phenomenon, and we may not all see it that dramatically to our future generations, the things we do, but then again, who's to know, really? So much of what goes on in this world is a result of what previous generations have done.
Well, you know, because it's a fascinating thing if you stop and contemplate that there's never been a nation that has been dispersed as the Jews have, that have ever come back and reestablished their homeland. Now, people will say, oh, well, that was, of course, because of the Holocaust, that was because of the Rothschilds, or that was because of the Zionists, but suddenly God could use all of them to reconstitute the state of Israel, mm-hmm. that's been gone, you know, for almost 2,000 years,
right.
And suddenly it's been reconstituted, and they've gone back, they've rejuvenated the language of Hebrew, which had been more or less dead for, you know, for 2,000 years, and they've gone back to the shekel, which was the medium of exchange in those days, mm-hmm. and so many of the prophecies from the Old Testament, including the reestablishment of the state of Israel, were prophesied in the Bible. And, of course, how exciting it is as we see these things coming to pass today. And if you're coming from a Christian perspective, it all makes sense. If you look at it from the other perspective, or you think the Jews are responsible for all of our problems, and this guy's Jewish and he's a bad guy, and that guy's Jewish and he's a bad guy. And so you fall into all sorts of false understandings and misinterpretations of the exciting things that are going on today and God's hand in them.
God's never taken his hand off of Israel. There has never been another culture and nation which has maintained its identity, even though it was dispersed, its homeland was taken from it. It had no homeland. For 2,000 years, it's never happened before. There have been many, many cultures and nations come and go. Many languages have died, never to be resurrected. I'm from Montana, and there's a little tribe up there of Native Americans that's trying desperately to to record its language for posterity because the elders are all dying off. And I also have a home in Oregon, and the little tribe that's here in Florence, Oregon, has lost its language completely and will never be able to resurrect it. There are no written records. Here you have the Jewish people who had no homeland. They were dispersed all over the world, and yet now they're being gathered back again to their original homeland, and their language is still theirs. You know, it's just incredible. It really is. But there's another prophecy I'd like to look at, too, and that regards Ishmael. And what the angel of the Lord said to Hagar, the mother of Ishmael, when she was on the run from Sarah, the wife of Abraham. And the angel said to Hagar that Ishmael would be the father of several tribes and so forth, which, of course, has all come to pass. But also specifically this, Ishmael shall be a wild man, his hand against every man, and every man's hand against him. Now, I don't believe, Dr. Stan, that that was talking only about Ishmael himself. I think that it has been repeated and repeated all down through Ishmaelite history and Arab history, and continues to be today. There is a wounded spirit, a wounded child, I guess you could say, in the Arab psyche. That wounded child, Ishmael, who was rejected by his father, basically, and by the nationhood of Abraham, and outcast. And that plays itself out. This is really very sad, and maybe can help us develop a somewhat of a compassion for these people, to understand the psyche behind this, that these people are acting out a deep, deep hurt from centuries and centuries ago, and it comes out in the form of violence, which is exactly what this verse tells us would happen. That they would be wild, their hands against every man and every man's hand against them. And don't we see that coming to pass today?
Yes, we do. And, of course, my fear is that we're moving rapidly towards a war with the Muslim world. The only way we're going to change the attitude of the Muslim is by, you know, the word of God, you know, and by the
Absolutely.
Gospel. But you're certainly not going to win them to the gospel by attacking Iran and then going to war with the whole Muslim world. And certainly this radical form of Islam, which had been laid dormant for, you know, for really a couple of hundred years, is now being rejuvenated over there, being largely financed many times by our own intelligence agencies, printing radical Islamic books and financing radical Islamic leaders and infiltrating the movement. And we wonder why they're doing this, but I'm sure God has a reason. With God's, may very well, what appears to be being evil, sometimes I'm sure God can use for good.
Well, you know, God loves those people, too. He loves
right.
all people. And he understands the background as nobody else ever could understand it. I like to think in terms of individuals, and I do think that these individuals are carrying an inherited stain of pain,
That's
which
it.
Can only be healed by Jesus Christ. And we do see this happening in various parts of the Arab world.
And of course, I sympathize with the plight of the Palestinians, but the solution is not terrorism, which
no.
some of them have embraced and hatred.
No.
That is not the solution at all. And the only thing that's going to change the Palestinians is Christianity. The only thing that's going to change the Jews is Christianity as well. But
absolutely
of course,
right.
this is what people have to recognize. This is really a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield. And it's being fought in Israel between Israel and, of course, the Palestinians and Hamas and Hezbollah. And, well, they're exciting times. We've never seen anything like we've seen in the past. And And, of course, I think what lies in the future will be even more amazing. We'll be back with Ellen Gundersen Traylor. We'll go right ahead, Ellen.
I'm sure you've been talking about this on your program, but, you know, last week the Saudi king called for a meeting, a conference in Madrid of all the major religious heads in the world, all the major religions from Christianity to Buddhism and Islam, Judaism, on and on and on. And, you know, I have mixed feelings about that whole thing. I mean, we can look at it in different ways. I think it's very interesting, very interesting. But the most interesting thing to me is that within a few hours of the conference beginning, it was soured right out the gate by a confrontation between Muslims and Jews in the conference. And really just about shut the whole thing down. Now, this again is evidence. There is an ongoing animosity between the Jews and the Arabs, or the Islamists anyway, which cannot be solved by sitting down at a table. There's only one way to bring peace, and that's if both parties recognize Jesus as the Messiah. And we are seeing this happen. There is a movement in Israel and the Palestinian territories today called Sons of Abraham, plural, Sons of Abraham. And this is these are Messianic Jews, and I suppose you could call them Messianic Arabs, who are finding Jesus as their answer. And in that happening, they are coming together. And they are actually meeting and worshiping together. It's quite a phenomenon.
It really would be.
Mm-hmm. But it's the only thing that would ever bring them together.
Well, I really feel, of course, that right now we're going to be moving into some very, very difficult times. But only when times are difficult will people begin looking for an answer. And the only answer they're going to be able to find is in our Lord.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because when things are hopeless, you have nothing else to cling to.
Right.
And, of course, one of the great problems of today is the affluence of our people here in the United States and certainly even over in Israel as well. I mean, many people live very comfortable lives. But so when you're in that sort of a situation, most people don't think they need God.
Oh, sure.
When, of course, when they lose what they have from a material point of view, then they begin searching for God and become dependent upon Him.
Mm-hmm. Another bit of prophecy that I think needs to be explored more, and I really haven't read much on this, but is the meaning of the name Ishmael. It means God shall hear. And hear what? You know, what is it that God shall hear? That was the name Abraham gave this boy. And, of course, Abraham was, he named his sons under the guidance of the Lord. The Lord gave him those names to give to them. Isaac means God's laughter. We know that when Sarah overheard that she would be having a son, she laughed in the tent.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Ellen was simply saying that the names of Ishmael and Isaac, both of them had an important meaning. And certainly the name Ishmael means God shall hear.
Mm-hmm.
The name Isaac means God's laughter. And, of course, you remember that Sarah had actually laughed when Abraham told her she was going to have a son because, of course, she was barren at the time. She was, you know, in her 80s or 90s, and, of course, she knew it was long after the time when she could ordinarily expect to have a child. And so suddenly Sarah laughed at the idea of how ridiculous it was. But, of course, between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference.
But isn't it cute that God then named Isaac
right.
God's laughter?
Right.
In other words, God got the last laugh there. It's very meaningful, and it's also a joyous thing. You know, it's a happy name. But the name God shall hear for Ishmael, consider the situation here. This young boy had just been cast out of the family. His mother was in the wilderness with him, and he was about to die. And the Lord provided water, and the Lord came to her and spoke to her about Ishmael, some hopeful things and some not such happy things. But the name that Ishmael was given was God Shall Hear. And, you know, I don't believe that we have seen the fulfillment of that promise yet. I believe that God has never forgotten Ishmael. And as Christians, we tend to, you know, emphasize the Jewish side of the story so much, which is understandable, but that doesn't mean that God forgot the Ishmaelites or the Arab people. And this prophecy is yet to be fulfilled. And I believe that we may be seeing it come to pass in these last days. You know, the Bible says that in the last days, the Lord will pour out his Spirit upon all flesh. And that's not just Christians, that's not just Jews, that's not just any particular person. That's everybody. I don't think that we can possibly comprehend at this point just what that means. But part of it will certainly be a fulfillment of this promise that's embedded in the name of Ishmael, God shall hear. And it's fascinating. He shall hear what? Well, he shall hear the, and he has always heard, but he shall act on it at this point. He has heard the cries of these people. He has heard the cries of Ishmael. He's heard the pain. He doesn't hate them. And, you know, it's awfully hard when you see these people in the black headdresses with the eyes cut out and with the big swords and you know, all of the saber rattling and the beheadings and all of these awful, awful, awful things that have happened. As Christians, how do we deal with that? How do we think about these people? I think that the answer lies in asking ourselves, how does God feel about them, and how is he dealing with them? And I don't mean to downplay what they've done, or, you know, I'm horrified by it. I hate it. I hate it every bit of everything I hear about what goes on in these confrontations and terrorist attacks and so forth. I love the Jewish people, and I don't like to see them hurt, and I don't like to see anybody hurt by Islam and by its radical teachings. But Ishmael himself and his descendants are still beloved of God. And if we're to pray for anything, it's to pray for the peace of all people. And of course, we know that that can only come through an understanding of who Jesus was and what he's done for us. You know, Dr. Stan, I prayed like I always do that when I would talk to you tonight, that the Lord would tell me what to say. And I'm very burdened for people in the audience tonight who are listening, who have that Arab background and perhaps even are Muslims. And I want them to know that if they only knew, if they could only understand the love of God, our Father. You know, the word love is not in the Quran even once. Nowhere in the Quran is the word love. And God loves you. And he gave his son for you. He doesn't love Isaac any more than he loves you. He loves everybody.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Ellen Gunderson Traylor. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ellen Gundersen Traylor, and of course, Ellen was just talking about, of course, how God loves the Arabs just as much as he loves the Jews. He has a special place in his plan for the Jews, but certainly God loves everyone. And of course, it's pretty interesting, Ellen, that we have a number of Afghan listeners up in the Bay Area who listen to our program. They don't seem to call in. We've never had a call from them, but we know that they listen up there because, of course, even though we're coming from a Christian point of view and most of the Afghans are Muslim, why, of course, they're looking for somebody who can address these issues from the point of view of the truth. And I think what you said was so important for them to hear.
Well, thank you. I sense in my spirit that there are people of this background listening in. And I wonder what drew them to listen in. You know, it's the Holy Spirit of God that drew you to listen in.
And the thing is, of course, that we often wonder, you know, who's out there listening? Well, I figure the people that are supposed to be listening are listening.
Yes, I do too.
People who aren't supposed to be listening aren't going to be listening.
That's
but
right.
I believe that God can direct people to our website or to our shortwave or to our radio stations. And of course, we do have a fair outreach into this and many of our other programs. And our whole idea, of course, we talk about issues. We talk about certainly politics. We talk about finance. We talk about health. But it all gets back to the common denominator, which is the spiritual battle that's taking place. That spiritual battle for the souls of men, the survival of Christian civilization. And we're losing that battle, and maybe God intends us to lose the battle. Our job is to do our best, but the victory will be the Lord's.
Right, right. We were talking about names, and I think it's interesting, too, the name of Abram and Abraham. Abram, of course, was Abraham's first name, and then God expanded it to Abraham. And Abram simply means exalted father, or my father is exalted, whereas Abraham means father of a multitude. It's as though the emphasis or the focus got broadened when God called Abraham. He would not only be a patriarch of a small tribe of people out in the desert, but he was to found nations, be a father of many nations. Isn't that amazing? And right there, again, we see the message embedded in the name, that he would be the father of such an enormous cloud of people. Of course, the Lord told him to number the stars in the heavens if he possibly could, and which, of course, is impossible, and that if he could do that, then he would tell him how many his descendants were. But his descendants would be like the stars in the heavens because they'd be such a vast multitude.
Well, Ellen, before we go on, I really want you to get out your website. I want you to get out your telephone number so people would like to get in touch with you. We do carry many of Ellen's books, but maybe she's got some other material that would be important for you to get. So how can people get in touch with your ministry?
Okay. Very simple, ellentraylor.com. Or if you go in on Google or Yahoo and just put in Ellen Traylor, it will take you to my website, and you need to know that Ellen is spelled E-L-L-E-N, and Traylor is T-R-A-Y-L-O-R. You can get contact information off the website. You can email me from there, info@ellentraylor.com, there is a phone number there and so forth. I do get calls quite frequently from my readers, and it's always a pleasure to talk to them.
Well, with all of your books, and you put out so many of them, I'm surprised you have time for talking to people because there's just so much going on all the time. Of course, you're constantly writing. Have you finished a new book recently?
I have, Dr. Stan. It is not out yet. I was telling your wife about it, and it would be fun to talk about it, but I want to wait until It is actually published.
All right, fine. Well, as soon as it gets published, well, I hope you'll get us a copy. And then I hope that you'll get back to the trilogy that you did, The Priest. Pardon me, it was The Priest, wasn't it?
The Priest and the Oracle.
And The Oracle.
And I am writing the third one.
All right, fine. I've been waiting for several years because it's really a fascinating sequence, a fascinating series. And I think I enjoyed the first two and certainly waiting for the third one to come along. And it's really the story of a sort of an Indiana Jones-type character who is, of course, recruited from a university to actually track down the priest. And, of course, the Jews have always been waiting, you know, to resume their sacrifices in the temple. But before they can do that, there's certain things they have to have. They have to have the ashes of a red heifer. They have to have the lineage of the priest going back to the Levites there. How would you identify somebody who is a direct descendant of the priest? Well, we have the DNA that they've never had before. Anyway, Ellen does a wonderful, wonderful job in the first of the series, and that is, of course, the tracking down of the priest. That, of course, so much of this is really based upon what's really going on. There's a group of Jews over in Israel today who are ready to start the sacrifices on the Temple Mount again, when, of course, God destroys the Mosque of Omar, the beautiful gold dome mosque, and allows them to rebuild the temple. And, of course, when you ask the rabbis, well, how are you going to destroy the temple and the Mosque of Omar? And they say, it's not up to us. God will do it. And then we will build our temple resume our sacrifices. And they're all set to do that, aren't they?
They're all set to do it. They have the robes for all the Levites. They have the implements for the temple, the brass candle stand, and all of the base for the Ark of the Covenant, they've identified how to make the dye for different garments and so forth. It's just absolutely fascinating.
But, of course, the question about the Ark of the Covenant. They have to have the Ark of the Covenant before they can, of course, build the temple and have God's presence there, because they believe the Ark of the Covenant contains God's presence. And, of course, the Ten Commandments are there and certainly other things in the Ark. Do you think the Jews know where the Ark is today?
I think they've always known where it was. I don't think that I'm quite convinced that they have. That's part of their secrecy. They do know where it is, and of course, a lot of Western civilization's history. That we have a lot of mystery based on the search for the Ark of the Covenant. The Crusades were largely a result of that attempt. Knights Templar and all that.
Don't forget Indiana Jones, the first one. Why, he was looking for the Ark of the Covenant along with the Nazis.
Absolutely, you bet. Well, yeah.
But, of course, this is really such an important part of history. Where is the Ark of the Covenant? And I believe the Jews know where it is, and they're just waiting to put it in the temple. That's what's so exciting. But they're not going to tell us where it is. And the last thing they'd want is for the Arabs to find out, because the Arabs would want to destroy it. The Arabs want to destroy everything that, of course, gives the Jewish a race legitimacy. So there's this constant bickering back and forth. But I believe, of course, God has preserved the Ark, and I believe God is going to somehow or other, and I don't know how possibly it's going to happen, but I believe God is going to destroy the beautiful, magnificent Mosque of Omar, and that will allow the Jews then to go ahead and build once again probably what will be the third or the fourth temple.
It would be the fourth temple.
Right, okay.
Well, I don't want to give away any secrets, but you're talking about the third book in the series.
Okay, fine. Well, see, I didn't even know, but of course, all I know is what the prophecies are and what's going on, and so I'm looking forward so much to reading the third in the series. And if you haven't actually, if you're out there in the listening audience, and you want to read wonderful biblically based books, why, Ellen's books are wonderful. We carry 10 of them, as I said, but we do carry in stock The Priest. We do carry in stock The Oracle, and once you get started reading them, there's the sort of books you just can't put down. fascinating. And she's done a wonderful job with them.
Well, there are 17 books altogether in the biblical novels, along with The Priest and the Oracle. And then the book I just finished, which is not a novel, would be book 18. But I'm about a third of the way through with The Cornerstone, which is the third one in the David Rothmeyer series, which is what you've been talking about, The Priest and the Oracle. So, it's exciting. It really is.
And, of course, you actually went over there, and you actually visited with a lot of people, didn't you? Didn't you travel extensively in the Holy Land doing research for The Priest and the Oracle?
Oh, absolutely. And not only in Israel, all over the Middle East, Jordan, Egypt, and so forth, but Italy, Rome, England, Ireland, and Germany. I was sent to all those countries to do research for these books. And you remember, I'm sure, the Irish priest, and you remember the setting in Oxford, and what they found at Dachau in the first book. So, all of those episodes of research have played into these stories. My visit to Rome, of course, fits in with the second book, the attempt to find the oracle, which is the Urim and Thummim of the high priest's breastplate. So, there's great adventure in these stories.
Not only that, but it's really based upon the fact, and of course, Ellen has done a wonderful job of tracking down the Jewish traditions and talking to the Jews and understanding how they feel. And of course, the difficulty is that the Jews really believe that they're going to be able to get the temple set up for the return of their Messiah. Of course, we as Christians believe, of course, the man that they're actually preparing the temple for will be the Antichrist, and of course, the Messiah will come later. The Jews wait for the return of the Messiah. Jews wait for the coming of the Messiah. We, of course, wait for the return of the Messiah. But unfortunately, we look at these exciting times from a different perspective, through a different lens, but certainly it all fits together in God's plan.
Mm-hmm. And there is a tremendous messianic movement in Israel, to the point that the Orthodox Jews have become extremely nervous about it. There are so many messianic congregations all over Jerusalem. You can take in a messianic meeting just about any night of the week now in Israel.
Oh, and virtually, the Orthodox Jews get so angry, they'll throw stones at the Messianic Jews, they'll go to their employers and try to get them fired, they'll do anything, slash the tires. I mean, they're so threatened by the Messianic movement within the Jewish community, because so many formerly Orthodox Jews, and even of course secular Jews, but Orthodox Jews are becoming followers of Yeshua.
Uh-huh.
And of course this infuriates them, because of course they cannot believe that any Jew would ever become a Christian. And there's always this feeling that somehow Christianity is the enemy of Judaism, where of course in truth it's its greatest ally.
Well, in truth it grew out of Judaism.
Right.
A lot of people don't seem to know or understand that Jesus was a Jew, and all of his followers were Jews. All of his early followers were Jews. All of the apostles were Jews. The New Testament was entirely written by Jews, except for the book of Luke, which was written by a Gentile. But, all of the... I think that Christianity has become so westernized and Europeanized that it's hardly recognizable as being related to Judaism and growing out of Judaism. It is the fulfillment of Jewish prophecy. And, of course, Jesus angered the Jews of his day. Why wouldn't he anger them today? They had to do something with him, they had to either believe what he said or they had to get rid of him. And so that's what they're doing today. They either are coming to him or they are trying to get rid of him or get rid of his followers. It's just the same story all over again.
Well, I think, of course, within Christianity, there's an effort just to, well, all we're really interested in is the New Testament. Nothing in the Old Testament is of any benefit. Oh, we're not, of course, bound in any way by the Old Testament, except, of course, in, I think it's in Malachi, where they tell you you're supposed to tithe. But other than that, and talk about hypocrisy, you know. Of course, I believe we are supposed to tithe. And I think that the prophecies and the writings of the Old Testament are an important part of modern-day Christianity.
Of course. It all ties together. It's all one big story.
And, of course, the trouble is that so many, you know, of our modern-day more liberal ministers don't want to get into prophecy. They don't want to talk about the prophecies. And yet, of course, almost a third of the Bible is about prophecy.
Sure.
Prophesying the things that are going to pass. And so many of them have come to pass. And so many of them, I believe, are going to come to fulfillment during our lifetime. I think we live in the most exciting time in all recorded history.
Well, and we're seeing a lot of it coming to pass, too, on a daily basis.
And, of course, you know, if you go into what's going on today, I mean, how do you make any sense out of our going into Afghanistan and then not trying to get Osama bin Laden? You know, here we can read a newspaper from space, but we can't find a 6-foot Arab, you know, with an IV who's on dialysis. You know, and we supposedly he's living in a cave somewhere over there in Pakistan. And then, of course, we go to war with Iraq, and we don't want to pull out of Iraq. And people don't understand this is all part of this whole program. I mean, of course, it's going to antagonize the Arab world and lead to the wars, I believe, are prophesied in Ezekiel 38 and 39. In fact, we can almost read, of course, Ezekiel 38 and 39 and see the fulfillment of prophecy today as all of these countries, Gog and Magog and Persia and Egypt, are all lining up for this coming great war with Israel. I don't believe this is the Battle of Armageddon. I don't know how you feel about that, but I think that there's going to be that battle, and then I think there's going to be another great battle sometime in the future. But I think we're just lining up for Ezekiel 38 and 39. What are your thoughts?
Well, absolutely. In fact, you took the words right out of my mouth. We are seeing the lining up of the nations gathering around Israel, and that Israel is becoming the stumbling block of the nations, which is exactly what was prophesied in Jeremiah, that Jerusalem would be a cup of trembling and that it would become the stumbling block of the nations, and that any nation that fell on it would be broken to pieces. How else can we explain what's happening? That's exactly what's going on. The nations haven't been broken to pieces yet, but just give it time. They are all lining up against Israel and against Jerusalem in particular, all in the futile hope that they can get rid of the Jews. It won't happen.
Well, of course, by man's measure, why it could happen, by God's measure, I don't believe it's going to happen. And yet, if you look at today, with Hezbollah with 40,000 missiles, and many of these are very sophisticated missiles, they could lob from Lebanon, from southern Lebanon, and hit any part of it. Israel today, Hamas has a number of weapons they've gotten from our good friends in Egypt, who we finance. Iran has weapons. Syria has, these are missiles they can launch. There is no way, no possible way by man's view that Israel could survive suddenly attacked by all these missiles. It just would not be logical. So we're going to have to say that if she does survive, it has to be God's intervention. I believe God has made plans to protect Israel that most people out there in the listening audience have no idea. And, of course, we've talked a little bit about the Nautilus system, which I believe is up and functional and ready to intercept those missiles. And you're talking, you know, probably somewhere, you know, total between Syria and Iran and Hezbollah and Hamas, probably close to 100,000 missiles, all going to be aimed at that little country of Israel. And, you know, two or three of them just in Tel Aviv would destroy the nation there, especially if they had chemical or biological or even nuclear warheads on them. And, of course, I think that these things could really come to pass in the very near future. This is what's so exciting. And I believe that we're going to see God's hand, you know, protecting Israel. This is my belief. And
well, you know, if he did it in 1967, which has no comparison, really, in size to what we're talking about right now, but he did it then. He did it in the days of Joshua. He did it in the days of Gideon. He can do it again, and he will do it again, because the Bible tells us that he will do it again.
And I think that's really what's so important, that we have to realize that we may have our ideas, we may have our theories, but in the final analysis, it's not what we think at all. It's what God has planned. And of course, how do we know what God has planned? Well, it's right there in the Holy Scriptures.
That's right.
That's why reading them is so vitally important. Well, a guest has been Ellen Cuddison Traylor. 17 novels. I guess we only carry about 10 of them. We'll have to find out what the other 7 are, but I know my wife has all of them. And of course, anybody would be interested in knowing more, we can go to our website and look them all up. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program with Ellen Cuddison Traylor. Well, Ellen, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Wow. We've had a lot to say here.
It's been a fascinating program. We always enjoy having you as a guest. And we do hope, I'm sure, that many of our listeners out there, you know, are fascinated by the things we talk about as well.
Well, I just want to emphasize, if anybody has any question or wants to communicate with me, to please go ahead and email me at info@ellentraylor.com. I would just absolutely love to hear from anybody out there who has a question, particularly if you have questions regarding God's love for Ishmael, God's plan for the Jewish people, and so forth. Please feel free to ask me. I don't claim to have all the answers, but I could certainly chat with you about it. And I just thank you so much for having me on again.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and I hope that you're really going to get into full gear and finish up that story, because you know, I've been waiting for about 4 years. When did you finish the Oracle? How long ago was that?
That came out in 2000.
Oh, my goodness. It's been 8 years that I've been waiting for the conclusion of this series. But I think for our listeners out there, you'll find it fascinating. And Ellen is a wonderful, wonderful storyteller. But, of course, so much of this is all based upon the Bible, and certainly on her extensive research and talking to the Jews and talking to the people all over the Near East and the Middle East. And it's really, of course, wonderful, wonderful stories. You'll learn so much about biblical prophecy and biblical things, as well as, of course, having a great deal of entertainment. Sometimes a biblical novel can really, in some ways, have such an impact on the individual. It's something that you'll never forget.
Well, thank you. I can tell you haven't forgotten.
No, I haven't. And certainly, I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of them. Well, please keep in touch with us and let us know when that new book is out. Get us a copy of it. We'll do a program and try to promote you and help it on all of our programs.
Okay. Thank you.
Good night and
God bless.
God bless
you.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, that was Ellen Cuddison Traylor, and I do hope that our listeners out there enjoy our conversation. Certainly, this is not as exciting as some of the things we do. And yet, of course, as far as the eternal significance, it's probably far more important, because everything going on today fits into God's plan. And you have to understand that. We talk about the spiritual battle that's being played out today, but remember, God influences even the wicked people, and many times they are doing his bidding. I see this in what's unfolding in the Near East and the Middle East today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Divinity is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to help us, if you're in a position to help us so that we can maintain the 60 outlets we have, I think I counted them up, 62 or 63. Now, of course, that includes satellite, it includes shortwave. We're on 3 different shortwave stations. Certainly we have the internet, a number of internets we have, but we do have a number of radio stations all across America, and of course, putting them all together, we have at least a shadow across this country. Our Saturday program goes to, I think, 30, 39 different stations. So our weekend program, only half an hour, but it's people are hearing the truth they never would before. And if you'd like to be part of our team, we could certainly use your help. I know a lot of people are out there hurting and can't help. Well, you can at least talk to others about what's going on and refer them to our program. But if you're in a position to help, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because America is under attack today. Well, Chris, we want to mention Eldon Gunderson Traylor's wonderful books. We carry them, and we carry about 10 of them, and whether it be The Priest and the Oracle, whether it be her book on Abraham or on Melchizedek or on Esther or on Mary Magdalene or on certainly Noah. I remember that one with great interest, and a number of others. And simply go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, or you can always call our 800 number. 800-544-8927. Ask for a list of the books that we carry by Eldon Gunderson Traylor. And when you get done reading those, well, you can go to Eldon's website and pick up the other ones. We also want to mention we do carry music. Why would you carry music? Well, because I walked into a store one time. It was a novelty store, and I heard the most beautiful music being played in the background. It was piano music. And I said, where did that music come from? And they introduced me to a man named Newell Oler. And so we actually bought all of his music, and we played it on our local radio station. But we also, of course, want to introduce you to it as well. And we have it on DVD, on CD, CD-ROMs, and wonderful, wonderful music, just restful music. And when everything seems to be going terribly, why, you sit down and listen to Newell's music, and certainly it's not new age. It is simply the old favorites, but he had a wonderful, wonderful talent. We had the opportunity to meet Newell Oler. And so if you'd like to hear his music, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. I know when Joel Skousen visited us, my wife gave him some of the CDs to play on the way. They were driving back to Utah, where Joel lives, and how much they expressed their thanks and how much they enjoyed it. If you'd like to get the music, why don't you just give us a call? We give you a list of them, and you may want to get them. They're not expensive. They're wonderful gifts. Really, of course, a very remarkable individual who had a wonderful talent that God had given him. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, we've just completed our new 4 tape set on the murder of Bobby Kennedy. As you know, we have a 2-4 tape sets on the murder of a JFK. They call it the JFK assassination. We have a 4-tape set on the murder of Martin Luther King. Of course, he was killed as part of a CIA operation. They wanted to kill him. He was becoming too powerful a leader. He was going to lead a march on Washington, D.C. It was far easier to kill him than have to worry about a couple of million people marching on Washington, D.C. Against the war in Vietnam. They wanted to keep the war going, so they just killed Martin Luther King. How do we know that? Well, there was a trial. There was a trial where a man named Lloyd Showers was actually sued by the Martin Luther King's family for his part in the conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King. He eventually confessed to the whole thing. The trial went on for 4 months, 54 witnesses. And would you believe it? Not a word in the controlled media. Do you remember when the trial was completed and the jury found? Well, you'll have to get it